source sheet, I hope. We are talking about Yip, or Yisro, as you prefer. And the question, as I put on the sheet, of what makes us so special. And this is actually based on an idea that I looked at quite a few years back on the Medrash about the Malachim and Moshe when he came to get the Torah. And I was glad to have the chance to revisit it because I don't think I understood it properly when I first looked at this, but I think I have a better sense of it 10 years later. So, opening question. Probably obvious to you, but I want to make sure to ask the question first. What day did we receive the Torah? Not day of the week. What date did we receive the Torah? Alina, you're muted.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know it's probably debatable, but it's above Vav Sivan, but...
Right, so why do you say Vav Sivan? I mean, the Torah, let's put this out of the way. The Torah doesn't say. So you didn't miss anything in the Parsha. But why would you say Vav Sivan?
I don't remember the whole situation, but I mean, there's Shlosha Yimei HaGbalah, and there's discrepancies about that, and I don't remember now.
Right, so there is a debate. It's true. There is a debate about when exactly we received the Torah, and I gave you a table on the sheet to try to make it easy. Just to sum up what is a lengthy discussion in the Gemara. In Gemara and Shabbos, if you ever want to know anything about the giving of the Torah and what the Gemara has to say about it, it's this one Gemara and Shabbos that gives you everything. So it's, that's what I'm summing up for you here in source number one. What's very clear in the Chumash is that we arrive at Har Sinai on the first day of Sivan. That's very clear. The Torah says so explicitly. And that's found in our Parsha in the beginning of Shmot Yutet. And so that's not debated. Further, everybody agrees that the next day, the second day of Sivan, Hashem speaks to Moshe, and he gives him instructions about how the Jews should get ready for Matan Torah, to receive the Torah. And that the following day, the third day of Sivan, Moshe says to the Jews, time to get ready. They're supposed to have a 3-day prep period. If you take a look at source number 2 from our Parsha, V'hayu nechonim, or V'hayu nechonim, I should say, L'yom ha-shalishi. Be prepared for the third day. Ki b'yom ha-shalishi yered Hashem l'nechol ha'am al har Sinai. Because on the third day, Hashem will descend before the eyes of the entire nation on Har Sinai. So if you count on our calendar that you have in source number 1, 3 days of preparation, day 4 of Sivan, day 5 of Sivan, and then day 6 of Sivan. And the Pasuk says, on the third day, you receive the Torah. So therefore, you receive the Torah on the 6th of Sivan. That's one way you could do it. And that's the view of the Chachamim in the Gemara there in Shabbos. However, if you take a look at source number 3, you get another Pasuk from our Parsha, in which we're told, Vayomer el ha'am, Moshe said to the nation, Heyu nechonim lishloshes yamim. Be prepared for 3 days. Which suggests that you have a full 3-day period of preparation, followed by receiving the Torah. In which case, 4th of Sivan, 5th of Sivan, 6th of Sivan are prep, and you get the Torah on the 7th of Sivan. And that's the other way to look at it, even though the psukim continue to say, Vayhi bayom ha-shalishi, it was on the third day, which sounds like, again, the 6th of Sivan. But Rabbi Yossi's position is, we receive the Torah on the 7th of Sivan. Which, of course, leads to the question, then why is Shavuot observed on the 6th of Sivan? Right? And don't tell me, well, outside of Israel, people are observing the 6th and the 7th, because that does not count. Why is it that Shavuos is the 6th of Sivan, especially when, on halachic matters, we follow Rabbi Yossi? We don't, as a general principle, Rabbi Yossi wins his machlokot, he wins his debates. So why is it that we observe Shavuot on the 6th of Sivan?
Yes, does it have to do with, you know, counting the 49 days, and not nothing to do with the giving of the Torah, but to do with when Chagash, whatever it's called, in the Torah. Is it called Chagash Shavuot in the Torah? Matan Torah? Yeah, so it's counting after Pesach.
Right.
Not this counting.
Right, so Shavuot has multiple names. It does get called Chag Shavuot. It also gets called Chag HaBikurim. And it's Chag HaKatzir, the holiday of the harvest. So it's really about Bikurim and gratitude for the harvest, as well as the Mishnah and Rosh Hashanah says on that day we're judged for the fruit of the trees. So you know, all of that, the 49-day count, terminates on the 6th of Sivan. So you could give that answer, and it's a fairly straightforward answer. And on the sheet in source number 4, I gave you the theoretical possible dates for Shavuot on that basis, which if Nisan and Iyar are 9 days, Shavuot will be the 7th of Sivan. However, if one of them is a 30-day month, then it'll be on the 6th of Sivan. And in our calendar, you get the italicized one that I gave you there. Nisan for us is always 30 days. Iyar for us is always 29 days. And therefore, Shavuot on our calendar always is the 6th of Sivan. And theoretically, if Nisan and Iyar were both 30 days, then it will be the 5th of Sivan. But it's based on concluding the Omer count. However, Reb Shimshon Rafal Hirsch adds a note, which I think is great. Writing on Parshas Emor, he says that what we're celebrating on Shavuot is not hearing the Aseret Hadibrot. It's not about having this conversation with Hashem about it's really hearing Hashem's monologue about the Ten Commandments. That's not what it is. Rather, we're celebrating our eligibility for Torah. The fact that we reached a stage when we were prepared to receive the Torah, which happens on the 6th of Sivan, before we actually receive it, that's what we're celebrating on Shavuot. That's what Shimshon Rafal Hirsch's beautiful idea. Okay. That's just all, you know, sort of introduction, something that is important to know, and I think Rosh Shimshon Rafal Hirsch gives a nice Dvar Torah, so that's good too. But as I said in the beginning, I want to talk about two Midrashim involving Moshe, Malachim, and Hashem. And we're going to see the frustration of the Malachim about the Torah being given to human beings, and what the debate between Moshe and the Malachim is supposed to teach us and our kids about our relationship with Torah and the world. We're not going to be doing a close analysis of the wording of the Midrashim. That's a good thing to do at some other time, but just basic lessons that we can take. So if you take a look at source number 5, you get the Gemara in that same sugya, that same discussion in Shabbos. It's in source number 5 that I gave you the relevant excerpt. And you've heard this before, I think. I don't think that this is new to you. Va'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Bishan she'ala Moshe l'marom. Moshe goes up to Shemayim. Amru malachei ha'shareis lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the malachim say before Hashem, Ribono shel olam, master of the universe, ma lilud isha beinenu. Why is there one who is born of woman among us? Please don't be insulted by the fact that he is called one who is born of woman. That's not an insult to him. It's simply how the malach distinguishes itself from the human being. Malachim are not born. Human beings are born to other human beings. So why is this Yilud Isha here? What is he doing here? Amar Lahen, to which Hashem says, Lekabel Torah Ba. He's here to get the Torah. Amru lefanav, so the Malachim say back to God, Chemda genuza she genuza lecha 974 dorot kodem shenivra haolam. This treasure which was stored away with you for 974 generations before the world was created, atam vakesh nala basar vadam, you want to give this to human beings. Where do we get the idea that the Torah was hidden for 974 generations with Hashem? Where does that come from? It's a pasuk. Davar tziva le'elef dor. Hashem commanded his word to the 1,000th generation, or after 1,000 generations. So we know that there are 26 generations from Adam through Moshe if you do the begats, right? If you count every, you know, I mean, it's not, this one's not so hard, right? Because it's 20 generations from Adam until you get to Avraham. And then you've got Yitzchak, Yaakov, Levi, Kehas, Amram, Moshe, which I hope is 26. I wasn't counting. I was just concentrating on getting the names right. But the but that's supposed to be 26. So 1,000 minus 26, 974. That's how we know it's 974 generations. And the message is, you stored the Torah away for 974 generations. What does 974 generations mean? If no one's being born and no one is dying, it's a period of time. There's this extended period of time before the world was even created. You hid it away. The Torah has no dependency on human beings. The Torah exists without human beings, learning it, practicing it, and so on. Why in the world would you give it to human beings at this point? There's no reason to do that. Ma enosh kisiz kerenu, uven adam kisif gedenu. What is man that thou art mindful of him, like they like to translate it, or as I did it here, what is man that you remember him? The other one's nicer. All right, in any case. Hashem Adonenu ma adir shimcha b'chol ha'aretz. Your name is so great, God. How in the world can you do this? T'naot chal ha'shamayim. Put your splendor, put your glory in the heavens. Keep the Torah with us, say the malachim. So Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Hachzer lehen tshuva. They have a good question. Why in the world should I give you the Torah? Moshe, you answer them. So Amar lefanav Ribono Shel Olam, he says, Master of the universe, Misyarei ani shema yisrifuni behevel shebefihem. They're going to burn me with their breath. They're going to burn me. I can't answer Malachim. Amar lo achoz b'kisei kvodi v'chazor lehen tshuva. So Hashem says, hold on to my throne and answer them. That's one Gemara about this, and we're going to talk about what Moshe's answer is. We're not quite there yet. What exactly is their critique of Moshe? What is their objection to giving the Torah to us? Look at their words. What do they call Moshe besides Yilud Isha?
Enosh.
Enosh, by quoting the Pasuk. Okay. What else? You're right, but what else?
Flesh and blood.
Basar Vadam.
Right, Basar Vadam. Right, there's also Ben Adam in the Pasuk as well. The image of somebody being Yilud Isha, Ben Adam, Basar Vadam, is an image of what? What does that convey about Moshe? If he is born of woman, born of man, flesh and blood, what's the contrast here to the Malachim?
That they're not.
Well, they're not, yes, but there's an image here of mortality, of fragility. You know? Human beings break. Basar Vadam, flesh and blood, deteriorates. Why in the world would you give your permanent Torah to those who are mortal? They can die. Torah is permanent. That's number one. Number two, those who are formed from human beings are impure, imperfect. The Malach, we're formed by God. If you have a Torah which is Tamima, which is perfect, why wouldn't you give it to those who are perfect? And Moshe knows it. Moshe acknowledges it. He says, I can't answer them. They're going to burn me with the vapor of their mouths. Because I am fragile. I am mortal. I am impure. So Moshe says to God, I can't answer. And Hashem says, hang on to my kisei hakavod. Hang on to my throne. Don't worry about it. And the and that's an image which, did I bring it on here? Did I bring the Chasam Sofer? He has a very nice explanation of that image. Which, oh, I bring it in number 12. So we'll get to it later. Chasam Sofer has a nice idea on that. But the, but that's what Moshe is afraid of. The same setup in which the Malachim dispute giving the Torah to human beings is seen in source number 6. Medrash on our Parsha and Shmos Rabbah. Ba'osa Shah, at that time when Moshe came to get the Torah, Bikshu Malachei Asheres Lifgoa B'Moshe. The ministering Malachim wanted to strike Moshe. Okay. So what we've established so far, besides calendar, is Moshe comes up to get the Torah, and the Malachim say, why in the world would you give the Torah to human beings? Human beings are fragile. Torah is eternal. Human beings are impure. Torah is pure. Why would you want to give the Torah to them? But there's something else going on here. Did the Malachim only say, don't give the Torah to human beings? Or did they have a second request, if you will? What else did the Malachim say in source number 5? They have a second point. The part that I underlined in the Hebrew.
It would, like, place your glory upon the heavens, like,
yeah.
Sort of exalt us,
mm-hmm.
or this world.
Tanahod chal hashamayim. Torah should be in the heavens. It should be with us. And here's my question. This is really the focus. What do Malachim lose if we receive the Torah? I mean, you teach the Torah.
They lose the Torah.
How do they lose it? They can keep on learning it. Right? It's just information. Why can't you give the Malachim the Torah? They had it. They had it for 974 generations. Seriously, I think they'd learned it by now. They,
exclusivity.
I'm sorry?
It's the exclusivity.
Why does exclusivity matter?
Maybe we could become more Malach-like from understanding the Torah. So they're afraid that these mere humans will become somewhat Malach-like, and that will be confusing, or they don't want that to be.
But if that's true, why do they highlight the things that you can never change? They highlight the fact that we can't be Malachim. Right? No matter how bright and no matter how educated a human being becomes, they're gonna be mortal. That's the way they are. And they're gonna have their imperfections. That's the way they are. It's so odd to see this. It sounds like kindergarten, doesn't it?
It sounds like they're trying to protect the kavod of the Torah. They're being zealous for the sake of the Torah. They don't want it to be degraded by exposure to mortals.
Mm-hmm. So one way to look at it is to say, it's not about us. It's not about us. It's the Malachim saying, it's not about us. It's about, as Tamar says, the Malachim. The Torah, excuse me. The Torah has its dignity reduced by being given to us. It's a fair argument. I think that their language, though, of Tanaud Chal HaShamayim does sound like we don't want to lose it, and not only that we think it's, you know, the honor of the Torah, but I hear it. You could suggest that it's simply undignified for the Torah to be given to human beings. You can make that argument.
Different Torah. Like, in my world, the Torah is to elevate humans, to help us know how to live in this life of non-heavenly life, and how to make sense of it, and how to be holier. it's not for Malachim. I never thought Malachim be Torah.
So you're already jumping to the answer, and one of the answers, but we're not quite there yet. I'm still trying to understand the question. Take a look at source number 7, please. Medrash in the beginning of Bereishis Rabba. It's a classic. Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Hoshaya Rabba Pasach. Rabbi Hoshaya Rabba is teaching Bereishit, and he quotes a pasuk from Mishle to start. Va'ehye etzlo amon, va'ehye shashuim yom yom. This pasuk, this sentence here from Mishle, is talking about the Torah. It's not talking about the Torah. The Torah is actually speaking. The Torah is personified. It is speaking here in Mishle. And it says, I was for God an Amon. If you look at the top of the next slide, I gave you my English translation. Then I was for him an Amon. I was a delight each day. And in the Medrash, Rav Hoshaya Rabba tries to provide explanations for what an Amon is. The word lends itself to different approaches, and here's one that the Medrash brings. Amon is Uman. An Uman, not a place in the Ukraine, an Uman is a craftsman, an artisan. HaTorah Omeres, the Torah says, Ani hayisi klei umnuso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I was Hashem's tool for creation. Benoik Shaba Ola Melech Basavadam Bonepalton. Usually what happens is a human king, a flesh and blood king, creates a palace. Eino Bono Samidas Atzmo Alamidas Uman. He doesn't come up with the designs. He hires somebody. You hire an architect, and the architect comes up with the designs. Bahuman Eino Bono Samidas Atzmo, and the artisan himself doesn't, and now he's not really on the architect level. He's talking about the craftsman. The craftsman isn't building it on his own. Ela difteros upinkasos yeshlo. He has a set of plans. He has schematics. He has diagrams. Ladas heach hu osech hadarim, to know how to make the rooms. Heach hu osech pishpishin, how to make the gates. Kach haya kadosh baruch hu mebit batara boreas haolam. That's the way it worked when Hashem created the world. Meaning, Hashem has the Torah as a manuscript, and or as a set of plans, and he used it to create the world. You've probably heard the Aramaic version of this at some point. I believe it's from the Zohar, if I remember correctly. Istakel be'oraisa ubara alma. God looked in the Torah, and based on that, he created the world. Right? You've heard this idea before? The Torah is the set of plans, the set of designs for the world. Well, if you give the blueprint to the Malachim, then the Malachim are the shapers of the world. They are the ones who are actually creating, designing, moving the pieces. But if Hashem gives it to us, then we are the shapers of the universe. It's not about the knowledge. It's about the role that comes with holding the Torah. It doesn't matter. Everybody can read the blueprints. But who gets to execute the blueprints? By Hashem giving us the Torah at Har Sinai, Hashem is making us the executors of the blueprints, the shapers of the universe. You follow? That's what's going on here. Now, I used to conflate this with a different debate when I looked at this, and this is something that I now have come to understand isn't necessarily the same debate as something else. But I want to show you the other debate too. The Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb wrote an article back in, I think it was in the 50s, on extraterrestrial life, the existence of life on other planets, and the question of what would Judaism believe about that. And there actually is literature going back quite a ways on this issue of whether there is other life in the universe. And he presented it as a debate about anthropocentricity, which is a word that I really like, because if you can get the word down, you can really impress people when you say it. Like, in the middle of a sentence, you can just rattle off anthropocentricity. You know, it sounds good. What does it mean? Anthro, right? Human being at the center. And the question of whether the world is really about us or not. Are we the purpose of the universe? What would you say? From a Torah perspective, are human beings the goal of creation?
Human beings, but in service to God.
Okay. With the qualifier, human beings. Why do you say that?
The way that it's sort of set up is that everything is almost created for Adam and Chava.
Mm.
Like there, that's the, like everything else is a setup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything has a role, but Adam and Chava have a purpose.
So if you're working from the Torah's account of creation, then I think you're right. I think Torah positions us that way. The argument could be made, though, that that's the book that's designed for us. Not everybody needs or has that book. Maybe they have some other message from Hashem. The Rambam thinks that we are not the goal of the universe.
That's sad.
Yeah, sorry. The Rambam's humbler. Take a look at source number 8 from the Moreh Nevuchim. You can bring other sources to support it as well, but because this isn't our principal point, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I did want to show you the debate. So I didn't bother to bring you the classic Hebrew that people have for the Moreh Nevuchim, since it was written in Arabic anyway. There's really no point. So I just brought you the Friedlander translation, which is the one you can cut and paste online. The Rambam says, "We who believe in the creation must admit that God could have created the universe in a different manner as regards the causes and effects contained in it," right? Hashem didn't need to create any particular thing in order, like the universe didn't have to be the way it is. Hashem could have created it without a law of gravity. That would have been amusing. Hashem could have done whatever he wanted in creating the world. Well, he says, this would lead to the absurd conclusion that everything except man existed without any purpose. As the principal object, man could have been brought into existence without the rest of the creation. If you're going to tell me that everything in the if you're going to tell me that human beings are the focus of creation, and that Hashem didn't need to create any of the other things that he created, other than to serve man, but he didn't need that. He could have created other things instead. Then these things that he created actually don't have a purpose. Let me say that a little bit better. I think I mangled that a bit. Let's take tree frogs. Okay, if you believe that human beings are the purpose, I would like to like pull one in off screen. You know, that'd be cool. The tree frogs, you know, exist, if you believe that everything in the universe exists for the sake of human beings, then tree frogs exist for the sake of human beings. However, Hashem could have created the universe as he chose. He didn't need tree frogs. He could have created it without a need for them. Whatever role they fill for human beings, something else could have filled instead. In that case, they really don't have any meaning or any purpose, the Rambam is saying. Happens to be God chose to use them. But he could have just as easily created something else that would have filled whatever niche they fill. He doesn't like that idea, the Rambam. And so he says, that's not it. I consider, therefore, the following opinion as most correct, according to the teaching of the Bible, and best in accordance with the results of philosophy. Namely, the universe does not exist for man's sake. Each being exists for its own sake, and not because of some other thing. There are tree frogs, because tree frogs need to exist. Somehow, in Hashem's plan, tree frogs matter. The human beings matter, angels matter, everything has its own independent function. And if human beings were to disappear one day, all these other things would still have a reason for existing. That's the Rambam. Not the usual idea that you hear, I think. I think people don't usually speak that way when they're talking in terms of Torah. It's all about how, you know, if we didn't have people learning Torah, the world would cease to exist, and all of that. It really places us as the center. And what the Rambam says is, we're not. And Rabbi Dr. Lamb brings it in as part of the debate about extraterrestrial life. From his perspective, there could be other alien races out there which have their own function, and they may never interact with us. That's one perspective. Take a look at source number 9, where I show you Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon, preceding the Rambam, says, no, he says, we are the purpose of the universe, and therefore, we are in the middle of the universe. You are familiar, I hope, with the whole discussion about the heliocentric and geocentric universe, the idea that Earth is in the middle and everything else revolves around the Earth. Well, Rav Sadia Gaon, living as he did in the end of the 9th century, beginning of the 10th century, takes that as a given, that Earth is in the middle of everything. And he says, customary practice and construction place the most honored element in the center of the elements that are not as honored. We'll begin from the smallest things and note that a grain kernel is in the middle of all of the leaves. And he goes on to show you different items where the most important element is that which is in the middle. Consider the phrase I used before, we are the center, right? That's the way you talk. The center is most important. But he says, As we see this apply to most things, I have seen that the earth is in the center of the heavens, with the spheres revolving about it on all sides. This validates for us that the earth is the goal of creation. We then look at all of the earth's elements and see the dirt and water are silent, the animals cannot communicate, meaning they don't have abstract thought, and all that remains is man. Human beings are clearly the purpose, as far as Rav Sadia Gaon is concerned. His cosmology aside, and the idea that, you know, Earth is in the middle and everything else is going around it is interesting, but not for right now. He believes that human beings are the goal. Now, Hadassah mentioned before that this seems to be reflected in creation. Was it you, Hadassah, said it? Okay. So the truth of the matter is, you find both views reflected in a Braisa and the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Take a look at source number 10. Tanu Rabbanan, Adam Nivra be'erev Shabbos. Human beings were created on Erev Shabbos. Umipnei ma, why does God create us on a Friday? And the answer is because everything happens on Fridays. That's just the way Fridays are. That's not what the Gemara says. Shelo yehu minin omrim shutaf hayolo lakadosh baruch hu b'maisa bereishis. Lest heretics say Hashem had a partner in creation. In other words, this view in the Braisa says, Hashem puts us at the end so that people don't say human beings are God-like and were involved in creating the world. Hashem makes everything else and then brings us in at the end. One approach. Davar acher, another idea. Shem tazuach da'ato alav, if a human being becomes arrogant, Omer lo Hashem can say, Yitush kad mecha b'maisa bereishis. The gnat was created before you were. Right? You think you're important? You came in at the end. Davar acher, third idea, kidei sheikaneis lemitzvah miyad, so that we would immediately go into Shabbos. Hashem doesn't want to create us in the beginning and then have us sit around. He wants us to go right into Shabbos. Davar acher, and then the last idea presented here, kidei sheikaneis lesu'uda miyad, so that he could enter the feast right away. Meaning, Mashal lemelech basar v'adam shebana paltrin v'shichlalan v'hiskin se'uda, like a king who builds a palace, completes it, and then prepares a feast, ve'achar kach hechnis orchin, and then he brought in the guests. So looking at this medrash, or this brisa really, the answers 2 and 4 speak to our point. If I take approach number 2 here, we are last in order to say, you know, you're not so great. Mosquitoes were here before you were. Then it's more like the Rambam. We're not the focus. However, if I take the fourth approach here, like what Hadassah wanted to suggest, then Hashem brought everything else in so that the world would be ready for us. And then he brought us into the world so that we would come into a world that's ready. So that is like Rav Sadia Gaon, that we are actually the purpose. You follow? You can read it either way. These, though, are about the question of what the goal of the universe is. Our discussion about the Malachim and Torah, I think, can exist side by side with this. And that is the discussion of who shapes the universe. And the fact that the Torah is given to us to shape the universe does not necessarily mean that the universe was created for us. It just means that we are the ones in the position to do that shaping. It could be that we are just servants of the world. We happen to be the ones to shape it, but it doesn't mean it's about us. But now let's come back to our two sources with the Malachim debating and the issue of why we should hold this role. The Malachim say we shouldn't. Malachim say Torah is eternal. Human beings are fragile. The Malachim say the Torah is perfect and human beings are imperfect. We are Ben Adam. We are Yelud Isha. We are Basar Vadam. So what I want to show you is that those two sources we started with, the Gemara in Shabbos and the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah, give different answers about why we hold this role of being shapers of the universe. Chana already alluded to source number 11. Going back to that Gemara in Shabbos. Amar Lefanav, this is after Moshe is told to hold on to the throne. So Moshe says, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Torah Sha'ata Nosein Li, Ma Ksiv Ba. This Torah that you give me, right, that you're giving me, what exactly is written in the Torah? Not that he doesn't know, but he's, you know, playing the lawyer in the court. Very, very dramatic. So, what's in this Torah? Well, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. So Amar Lan, he says to the Malachim, Limitzrayim Yoradetem. What, did you go to Egypt? Lefaro Hishtabadetem. Were you enslaved to Paro? Torah Lama Tehelochem. Why should Torah be for you? Right, you've heard this before, I expect. Shuv Maksiv, but what else is written in there? Lo yelecha Elohim acherim. You shall not have the gods of others. And that's the way Rashi explains the pasuk. So he says to them, Bein hagoyim atem shruyim sha'ovdim avodah zarah. What? Do you live among people who worship other gods that you might be influenced to that? There's no reason for you to worship the gods of these other nations. Shuv Maksiv, but what else? Zachor es yom haShabbos lekadosho. Remember Shabbos or mention Shabbos to sanctify it. Well, klum atem osim malacha shatem tzvichem shvus. Do you engage in malacha that you need to now halt doing malacha? Shuv maksiba. What else? Lo sisa. Don't take God's name in vain. Well, masu matan yesh beinechem. Do you engage in commerce that you take oaths? Notice, by the way, he flipped the third and the fourth of the dibrot. He put Shabbos before Lo Sisa. I've never seen an explanation for why that was satisfying. But he goes on, Kabedes avicha v'yasimecha, honor your father and mother, and he says you don't have parents, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal. Do you have kinah? Do you have any jealousy? Do you have a yetzahara? So immediately, miyad hodu lo lakadosh baruch hu. They said, all right, we admit it. Shenamar, as the pasuk continues, the same pasuk we started with that had their objection in the earlier source. Hashem Adoneinu ma'adir shimcha b'chol ha'aretz. They said, Hashem, our master, your name is great in the entire land. What they didn't say at that point was, Tanaud chal ha'shamayim, place your glory upon the heavens. They backed down from their demand. What's Moshe's sales pitch here? It addresses human issues. Did you notice which human issues he brought in?
Mother and father, that they have the fact that they're born of other humans.
Yeah.
That they have jealousy. Mm-hmm. The fact that they were slaves. The fact that they could be used to worship idols.
Yeah.
Except for Shabbos, actually, now that I'm looking at it. He basically brings a lot of negatives, and then Shabbos.
Yeah. If I had been, you know, there, trying to make the argument that the Torah is designed for human beings, so I would have said, you know, I could say we were in Mitzrayim, and therefore clearly the Torah means for us. I would have said, what are the Torah's mitzvot? Pururavu. Malachim don't procreate. I would have said, the Torah talks about When you eat and you're full, you make a bracha. Malachim don't eat. Malachim don't become full. Right? I would have emphasized the mitzvot. Moshe is emphasizing our defects. He's emphasizing our flaws. He's emphasizing exactly that which the Malachim used against us. As you said, Yulud Isha ben Adam, right? He says, yeah, we have parents. I think that what Moshe is doing is he's suggesting that our ability to achieve greatness depends on the Torah. It's specifically the flaws that we have that demonstrate that Torah is meant for us. It's about our means of growth. We are being given the Torah not just in order to shape the world, but in order to shape ourselves. You follow? It's the Torah is our means of growth.
It sort of is implied that Hashem is picking those examples.
Because they were the ones in the Aseret HaDibros?
No, but just the way that it's written.
Oh, I see what you mean. Because
Hashem is drawing these up.
You're right. It's Hashem doing it. It's not Moshe. I hear that. So good. That just makes the argument stronger. Now it's Hashem doing it. It makes it more authoritative, but you're right.
Did you imply earlier that the Torah as we see it is not necessarily the Torah as, let's say, the Malachim would see it?
Yeah.
I thought that's what you said, because I thought that was very interesting. But if that's the case, then it's possible that the Torah that as the Malachim see it is not the same. And it wouldn't have been written in that way.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So in other words, the Malachim are looking at the same thing, so to speak. Yeah.
They're looking at the essence, but I would expect, if it's as what you said, which I've never heard before, but which is a very fascinating idea, they would see the Torah from a different way.
Right.
As possible that Hashem is sort of highlighting a different angle that's making them realize, oh, this is actually something that could be useful for those humans, and previously they hadn't seen that.
Right. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it taking that idea that far, but I think that's possible. I think that is possible. Yeah. I mean, the way I had phrased it before and framed it was not just about Malachim versus us, but about tree frogs as well. In other words, there is whatever message Hashem wants them to see, whatever that means to a tree frog, is there. It also puts me squarely with the environmentalists, because now all of these species have to be preserved, even if there is no benefit to a human being at all. I think that's the logical conclusion, which I'm comfortable with. If you take a look in source number 12, this is the Chasam Sofer, commenting on Moshe holding on to the divine throne. He says, Haim ein lahem murgash umuvan begashmiut. He says, Malachim don't have any sense of, any comprehension of what it means to be physical. Aval ha'adam, the human being, shelo achiza b'chol ha'olamot, human beings have a share in all worlds. V'harbe me'am zachu l'drosh ma'aseh merkava, many human beings merited to study about Hashem's chariot, right, as described in Yechezkel. Nimsa haTorah ra'uila ahu masig hakol haolamot elyonot ve'atachton. The Torah is meant for the human being who can grasp all worlds. So, in other words, a human being is able to appreciate the message for the malachim as well as the message for us. Mashenke malachei asharet, as opposed to the malachim, they have their message. If I want to go back to what Tamar extended of that idea, the malachim have their tier within Torah, and we are able to perceive another layer. V'hainu echoz b'kisei kvodi v'achzer lehem tshuva, and that's what the Gemara means when the Gemara says, "Hold on to my throne, and answer them." Rotzalomar sheyiru v'yavinu sha'ata achuz b'kisei kavod ba'olam hayoser elyon. Let them see that you are capable of holding on to the divine throne. V'gam, but also, hachzer lahem tshuva, answer them Klum l'mitzrayim yoradetem. Did you go down to Egypt? Klum ra'anima sig mikisei ha'kavod ad olam ha'tachton. We can hold on to the throne, and we can also be in Mitzrayim. The layers that are found in the Torah are attuned to the human experience. You follow? That's the idea. So according to this view, the Torah is designed for us with our defects, with our challenges, and it enables us to grow. And now let me show you, though, a very different perspective. That medrash that I started with before in Shmos Rabbah, which again has the Malachim wanting to harm Moshe, gives us a different take. Because look how the medrash plays out when the Malachim oppose us getting the Torah. Asaba HaKadosh Baruch Hu klasterin shalpanav shal Moshe domela Avraham. Hashem gave Moshe a face that resembled Avraham. Hashem changes Moshe's face. The Malachim want to hurt Moshe. Hashem remakes Moshe's face that looks like Avraham. Scared his kids when they came down from Sinai. Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not really, because Moshe hadn't seen his kids in a while. That's the beginning of the Parsha. Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I atem misbaishin heimenu. Hashem says to the Malachim, aren't you embarrassed before Avraham? Lo zeu she'eradetem etzlo v'achaltem b'soch beiso. Is this not the one to whom you descended? The one in whose house you ate? Right? Going back to Vayera. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. Hashem then turns to Moshe and says, Lo nitlecha lecha Torah ela bizchus Avraham. You know why you got the Torah? In the merit of Avraham. Shenamar, based on a pasuk in Tehillim, Lakachta matanos ba'adam, you took gifts ba'adam, meaning because of Adam, and Adam is a reference to Avraham. Leaving aside the psukim and the analysis of this medrash, as I said before, I'm not doing a real analysis of the medrash, but this is a very different read, right? The Malachim are agitated. They want to harm Moshe. They want to retain their position in the universe. And Hashem defeats it by pointing to Avraham as their former host. So I'll ask you one question first, which is, did Hashem really need to transform Moshe's face in order to do that? Like, he could have just said, this is a descendant of Avraham. So the Eitz Yosef is a commentary on the Medrash, and basically says, there's nothing like a good visual, right, when you want to teach something. But the more substantive question here about this Medrash, does this actually work logically? This argument with the Malachim, hey, you ate in Avraham's house? Why doesn't this make sense? Yeah. Malachim don't eat. We said that before. Ve'chalta ve'savata is us. Malachim don't actually eat anything.
Gesture.
Bingo. It's not really a debt. The Malachim don't owe Avraham and his descendants anything. Bless you. Sarah made all that bread. The Malachim weren't eating the bread. Avraham showed them generosity, which was meaningful for Avraham. Because Malachim don't need to eat, but Avraham needs to eat. He gave them of his resources. That's the key. Malachim are incapable of self-sacrifice, because they don't have anything to sacrifice. Only we can do it. And that's what gets the Torah. There's a lot to say about the role of chesed in Torah, and it's a much bigger discussion. But to me, this presents the answer to the Malachim very differently. The first answer to the Malachim is the one in the Gemara in Shabbos, which is, the Torah is a requirement for us to enable us to grow. We, with our layers of experiences, we will use the Torah to be able to grow and become greater, and therefore we should be the architects of the universe using this Torah. This Medrash is saying that Torah is not our training thing. Torah is a privilege for us, earned by our chesed, earned by our self-sacrifice. We get the Torah because we give of ourselves. And to me, this pair of approaches provides two ways for us and our children to view Torah. You could present Torah as a set of rules that help us improve and thereby shape the world. And that's what the Gemara does. Or you could present it as a privilege and opportunity for us to be the architects, which we've earned. Now, on a guess, I'd suggest that most of us probably prefer the second approach. We like the idea that it's a privilege that we earned as opposed to, you know, a set of rules that help us to improve. But I think it's probably healthy for us to look at it both ways. You know? I think it's healthy to look at it both ways, to recognize both aspects to Torah as the rule book by which we grow and improve, and a privilege for us to be able to use it that we've actually earned, that we've been able to use it to shape the world. I also think, to go back to that point that I threw in about anthropocentricity, gratuitous mention of that word one more time, that it's good for us to remember the Rambam, right? Even if we are the shapers of the universe, that doesn't mean it's all about us. You know, there's more to it than just let the human beings play and grow and do whatever they're doing. Everything has its own function, which may well be independent of us, but we have to help it get there. Follow? Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So Hadassah, you'll let me know if we're doing Megillat Esther next week or if we're doing Parsha.